Hello again, and welcome to the MJA podcast. I'm Kate Swanell, and I'm the journal's news and online editor. Today, I'm delighted to be talking with Professor Peter Gibson, who is co-director of the Centre for Healthy Lungs at the University of Newcastle and the Hunter Medical Research Institute. He's also a respiratory specialist at John Hunter Hospital. And after that intro, you'll be unsurprised to learn that Peter and I will be talking today about severe asthma. What's the burden of severe asthma? How many asthmatics have severe asthma?
Severe asthma is a tiny proportion of the whole number of people with asthma. So asthma is really common in Australia. 1 in 10 adults would have asthma. And of them, about 1 in 10 as a max would have severe asthma. That's in terms of the prevalence burden. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the illness burden, it's massive. So, for example, half the expenditure that Australia spends on asthma care spent on people with severe asthma.
Right. I would imagine that it's a really nasty thing to have, that it very much impacts on quality of life as well.
Yeah, massive impact. When we look at work productivity, for example, people in the working age have very significant impaired work productivity because of asthma. That occurs with severe asthma much more so than, say, mild to moderate asthma.
What tips a diagnosis from moderate asthma into severe asthma?
So at the moment, the two features, and the main feature is that people don't respond to current therapy. So we have very good inhalers for mild and moderate asthma, and when used properly and managing triggers, you can get good disease control in the majority of people. But they're just poorly effective in people with severe disease.
What about the use of corticosteroids? Where does that sit in the guidelines these days?
But because the puffers aren't working, then patients with severe asthma come to rely much more heavily on oral corticosteroids. Now, that's good because it saves their life, but it's bad because of all the side effects that it has. Weight gain, easy bruising, thinning of the bone, so osteoporosis and fractures, cataracts. Will exacerbate diabetes, which is a not uncommon comorbidity. They can't sleep. People say they can't get to sleep at night, and it affects their mood. They're either, one moment they might be hyper, sort of overexcited, another time they'll be down or cranky or angry. So it's not a nice thing if you can avoid it.
Is there a whole other level where the corticosteroids don't do any good either?
Yes, and again, they're only partially effective for a lot of these people, so they keep them safe or keep them out of hospital, but they'd have to use them every day to get that effect, and they still have symptom and limitation on a day-to-day basis.
So what's the good news?
Well, so the good news is that some very bright people discovered this key pathway. In fact, it was an Australian, Colin Sanderson, who discovered the cytokine interleukin-5, and that drives a very particular pathway in severe asthma. It's called the eosinophil pathway. And then another group of scientists led by Paul Foster in ANU some years ago proved that if you knock out the IL-5 gene, you fix asthma, and that was in model systems. Mm-hmm. So then people have gone on to develop specific monoclonal antibodies that block interleukin-5, and when given to people with severe eosinophilic asthma, so you've got to get the right phenotype, but when you identify that, then you get a very dramatic response to treatment. It allows people who are on maintenance prednisone to reduce their dose at least by half, and some people can come off it altogether.
So what proportion of people with severe asthma have the right phenotype for this therapy?
Yeah, so about 50% have eosinophilic asthma.
So that's a pretty significant improvement for them.
Yep, yeah. It is. There's another... So monoclonals are really the game changer in severe asthma management. So interleukin-5 drives about 50% of cases. There's another group where allergic asthma is the problem, and that they're actually slightly more common, so about 75% of people have that type.
I'm talking today with Professor Peter Gibson from the Centre for Healthy Lungs. Peter would like to point out that there are 3 online resources, 2 of them for physicians and 1 for patients, that may be of help in regard to severe asthma. The Severe Asthma Toolkit was developed by the Centre for Excellence in Severe Asthma, and you can find it online at toolkit.severeasthma.org.au. The other physician resource was developed by the Thoracic Society of Australia and New Zealand, and you'll find it at their website, www.thoracic.org.au. The third resource is designed for patients, and it is available on the Asthma Australia website, www.asthmaaustralia.org.au. Peter has written an editorial for the MJA, which is published online at mja.com.au. The MJA has also produced a supplement today on severe asthma, which contains 6 full-length articles, all of which are open access, again, at www.mja.com.au. Are the monoclonals accessible, cheap? What's the current state of play with those?
Yeah, so we now have 3 monoclonals for severe asthma that are available on the PBS. That's a great situation for patients with severe asthma. So they are accessible. It's a fairly complicated process to access them, and not all centres are geared up to put patients through that process. So the actual implementation and model of care needed is still emerging.
You mentioned in your editorial the UK model. Tell us a little bit about that and whether you think it's applicable here in Australia.
So the UK model is a type that's not common in Australia. What they've done in severe asthma is they've said that throughout the UK we'll designate a small number of sites as specialist asthma clinics. And to do that, you have to be able to offer a certain range of service. And if you do that, we'll fund you to provide that level of service.
Excuse me.
Got a lot of appeal in terms of standardising care and concentrating expertise.
Of course, geographically, they're much smaller and denser, so maybe...
Exactly.
That's, yeah.
So it's not as... In Australia, our geography would sort of defeat that model, I think. And we really need to respond by finding ways to deliver that service that's appropriate for our population.
If you had a magic wand, what would you change first?
What would I change first?
Yeah.
Because you get magic wands, you can change multiple things.
Exactly.
So I think we need to look at upskilling our clinicians, linking centres of expertise with regional centres and rural centres.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're good at doing that in other areas, and I think we should look at ways to do that here. The other thing I'd do is I'd probably try and simplify the assessment process. I think that is a barrier for non-expert centres.
Why is it so complicated to assess somebody's asthma?
So the sort of criteria that we've put in place were appropriate for making sure the right person gets the right drug, but they require that person to go through multiple assessments
over
6 to 12 months, and that's sort of difficult to operationalise.
Yeah.
And I think it could be simplified.
How would you simplify it?
I would then link up, say, the assessment in regional Australia with, say, one of the expert centres and accept that. I'd remove the time. At the moment, you've got to have between 6 and 12 months under the same specialist. So that's not easy to achieve.
No.
So I'd remove that and I'd replace it. One way you could replace it would be having a multidisciplinary team assess the person, and that providing that expert assessment should give you the same type of information.
It sounds like there's a lot of good news in amongst this. People are looking to improve things. And what are the other frontiers in terms of research? Where else are we going apart from monoclonals?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So the obvious area is, if this treatment is good for 50%, what do you do for the other 50%?
Mm-hmm.
So that's talking about discovering new treatments for non-eosinophilic asthma. So there's some good research going on in that area. Predicting response and monitoring response. So I think if we learn from this, so what's opened up this area is the combination of a biomarker and a specific targeted treatment. So if we learn from that and not only discover new treatments but find the biomarkers that go along with them that predict response, then that's going to make a huge difference to people. Hopefully, these are effective drugs, but they are expensive.
Yeah.
If they can be made cheaper, and we can then start to investigate, are there other groups of people with asthma that might benefit from this?
Thanks, Peter.
No problem.
Thanks for your time. My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.